Misfits! Today we're discussing the romance novel, The Rogue Not Taken by Sarah McLean. We kick things off, as always, with a little bit of book news before we start asking some really tough questions, like, is this book feminist? And can consent be sexy? But don't worry, if you think we're going to skip over the naughty bits, we are not. So go ahead and start clutching those pearls now. There are spoilers ahead on today's episode of the Misfit Book Club. Hi, this is Maria Blackheart, and welcome to the Misfit Book Club, a podcast for readers, weirdos, blue stockings, normals, scribbling women, rogues, rakes, scoundrels, soiled sisters, and every type of bookish person in between. This is episode 14, and I'm here with my co-host, Pixie Bricker.
Maria, I have missed you so.
I missed you. It's been a while.
It's been too long.
We missed a week on our podcast. Well, we didn't miss a week. We just had to push this episode back a week. And that's my fault because I was traveling.
I did miss the podcast. It was kind of like, well.
It's a nice touchstone for us because we get to chat with each other and catch up on life and read books together. And it's just like a highlight. So, yeah, I went to visit my family who live in the middle of the desert. But my grandmother is 87 years old. And there's this mountain in our town and it has a big Christ statue on top. And it's like a kind of like a pilgrimage walk up to the top. She had been wanting to hike that trail for 60 years. And so when I got into town, my grandma was like, I really want to try and make it to the top. So my dad, my aunt, my grandmother, my husband, and I all went to the mountain. And my aunt was like, oh, it's like a mile to the top. It's no big deal. It is 3.5 miles to the top. Oh, I know gosh. Because I tracked it on my Fitbit. And so we get started and just one foot in front of the other, she makes it to the top. Like she made it all the way to the top and promptly started crying and screaming, I am 87 years old.
Oh my goodness. That is so amazing.
In fact, she did it while talking the whole time. I was winded, but she was like, bup, 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 bup.
That is so amazing. Your sweet little abuelita.
I know. Climbed You've met her, mountain. Right?
Yes.
And the next day, I was sore. She was not. She made me walk all the way around the block with her so she could tell me all the gossip in front of each house.
Amazing. I know. We both have extremely stalwart grandmothers.
Yes, we do. Oh, your grandmother's so, so sweet.
Well, she loves you. My grandma, guys, thinks that Maria and her husband basically are her grandkids, too. She loves them so much. And this is the same grandmother who had a heart attack and didn't know it and then went and had a second heart attack and drove herself to the emergency room and was like, I think I'm having a heart attack.
No, yeah. I didn't know that story.
She did. She just kind of hopped in the car and drove over there. Sure enough, she'd had two heart attacks. If you guys have a grandmother, go hug her.
Tell her you love her and ask her about her life stories because I bet they are a riot.
They're probably crazy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. So thank you guys for your patience and waiting a week for this episode. How have you been, Pixie?
It's weird because I'm really wrapped up in the Olympics, even though I, number one, hate skiing. Like there's very little that I hate more than snow skiing. And number two, I hate sports. Okay, I won't say hate sports. Like, I can enjoy going to a sporting event. Like, it's fine. But at this time in my life, I'm like, I could do without them. But I'm just loving the Olympics. I'm having a great time watching them, mostly because they're so fantastic. It's like the sports that they do are so bougie.
It's all après-ski.
Yes, it's like rich kid sports. And I'm just like, wow.
This is the life I should have had.
But I've been really into it. I'm loving the skating and just all these crazy badass ladies. Also, I love Johnny Weir and Tara Lipinski with my whole heart.
No, they're fantastic. Most of the commentators have been really good. I hate Bodie Miller, who does skiing.
Yeah, he's not my fave either.
You know, Pixie, I feel like you and I have a future in curling.
That would be the only one I could probably do.
I am super into the bobsled, and I didn't realize I was until just recently. And I don't think I realized how hot bobsledders are.
Ooh, there are some really good looking Olympians. That's true. Although some of the best looking ones are the cute gays. Adam Rippon is a gorgeous man.
I would love to have him on this podcast. So if you know Adam Rippon, we'll read whatever he wants. Adam, call us.
He is so funny. I can't get over how funny he is. I love that guy. But no, I'm having a good time getting to see all that stuff too.
You know what else was a good time?
What?
Talking about Barnes & Noble with everyone on Twitter.
Ooh, that was good.
Yeah. So what happened was, I guess last week they fired a bunch of their kind of middle management in store. So people showed up for their shift at work and the store managers had to let them go.
That's terrible.
Yeah. This is because Barnes & Noble had a really bad holiday quarter and their solution was to fire a bunch of people and people were really upset about it.
As they should be, because a lot of the people they fired are the people that they know when they go to Barnes & Noble. The ones who are like the lead cashiers who they see on the regular. Especially because if you go into a bookstore, a lot of the time that's the best part. It's your bookseller.
So we talked about it on Twitter and we mentioned, and we've mentioned on this podcast, that you and I support Barnes & Noble over Amazon for various reasons. So we got into a discussion with a bunch of our listeners and our followers about whether we should be supporting Barnes & Noble when they're doing things like this to their employees.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I've like alluded to this before on the podcast, but I work in books like as a business. So I come at it from this particular angle. Right? Like the market of books. And so it's very fascinating to me to get to see what different readers and buyers prefer. Because obviously everyone is different. Not every person prefers brick and mortar. Not every person prefers one click on Amazon. I just like to see that because I tend to get stuck in my little bubble and I get very passionately anti-Amazon, as you probably could tell, for lots and lots of reasons. I liked seeing what everyone had to say.
Right. And they had some really good points. If Barnes & Noble isn't providing the right kind of experience for its customers, how is it going to stay alive? I just thought it was a very fascinating, enlightening, really smart conversation. So,
it was, yeah.
Yeah. So if you guys have opinions about where you like to buy your books, do you shop at Barnes & Noble? Do you want Barnes & Noble to stay open or do you want a different company to take its place? Let us know. Let's keep that conversation going.
I read a really interesting article this week about Waterstones in the UK, right? Which is a pretty large retailer of books. Basically, they have done extremely well in the last couple of years. And basically, it just argued that Waterstones does so much better because the different stores have individual flavors. You know, they kind of have an independent feel to them because they let the bookstores have autonomy in terms of where they put things, how they stock items, figuring out what's best for their store. And so it's less corporate feeling. You can go to one at this part of town, go to a different one in a different part of town, and it feels different. Barnes & Noble could probably learn from their business model the things that have done well. I just get really angsty about ordering everything from Amazon because they are such gobblers. Like, that's what I think of when I think of Amazon, is they are out to gobble up everybody's market because they have just taken up so much market share. And when they have it all, they can charge whatever they want.
Yep. I think when you love books, buying books is part of the pleasure. Like, there's nothing more exciting than walking into a bookstore and walking out with a book that you've picked out, or opening a box that comes to your house and pulling this beautiful book that you've ordered out of it. Mm-hmm. And so it's not surprising to me that bookworms are super passionate about how they get their books.
Definitely.
I know I am.
Well, I think you're most passionate about Book Outlet. Book Outlet seems to be one of your faves. I also would love to know, like, if you do have a really great independent store in your city, what you like about that store.
Maybe we should just have that as a general question. Maybe not our very next podcast, but as we do our discussion for our next book.
Yeah.
What do you love best about bookstores? Like, what would your ideal bookstore look like?
Oh my goodness.
So when we're retired, when we're 95 or whenever we can afford to retire and we open our bookstore, it can be the best bookstore ever.
I'm ready. I'm ready to retire.
You and me both. And I guess there's like no real good segue into this one, but there's also been another big book happening in the past week, and it has to do with the Me Too movement. Me Too has to do with women speaking up about sexual harassment, and now it's bled over into publishing. And so a bunch of women and men came forward and talked about YA and kids authors who had harassed them. And you guys can Google it. You can go, you know, read up on it. We're not going to really name names here. But what we did want to say is that for anyone out there who has experienced harassment or assault, we believe you and we support you. And we are very passionate about this podcast being a safe space for everyone. So we just want to affirm your experiences and offer you support if you decide to come forward.
I couldn't have said it any better or add anything more perfect to that.
With that, that's the book news. And now we can talk about our romance novel, The Rogue Not Taken by Sarah McLean. Oh, I'm so excited. So what did you think of it, Pixie?
I found it so fun. I anticipated having a good time enjoying myself reading it, and I did. I was unprepared for all of the good twists and turns in the story, which I read a lot of romances. So I usually am pretty good at kind of guessing them, but I think that this one was really clever. I did feel like it was a bit of a slow buildup.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Maybe a little bit too slow in the beginning, but I got there. Which is, you know, an analogy for other things.
Yeah, and we are going to be talking about other things this episode. So everybody should just gird their loins. Be prepared. I loved it too. Mm-hmm. I would agree. So I feel like the book is probably 100 pages too long. There's a little too much like back and forth angstiness for pacing's sake. Right. It kind of bogs down in that every once in a while. But it is so clever. The dialogue is so good. And I agree. Like, there are a bunch of twists in the plot that I think are very unexpected and really good.
What did you think about Sophie and King as hero and heroine?
I loved Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
Sophie is a bookworm like we are. She's super smart. So I super loved her. And I also loved that she had self-confidence issues, especially ones that I kind of identify with, like being unfun, right? Aww. It's like, oh, yeah, I know that feeling. It took me a little while longer to like King.
Same.
He was kind of a jerk for like the first 200 pages of the novel. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ew, I don't like you at all. But once you figure out why he is the way he is, I had a lot more sympathy for him.
I agree. Sophie, I found her incredibly sympathetic and funny. Sophie was interesting to me because she was situated in this really horrible place, right? She is a sister of this family that's supposed to be aristocratic, but no one gives them credit for it. She lives in a city that she hates, that doesn't want her, as she says, which I loved that. She was like, London doesn't want me, right? Which is a sad way to think about your home, right? Where you have to live, but she also doesn't feel that she has a home. And so when she goes back to Moss Bend and she has that really actually very sad scene with Robbie, I felt so much for her because suddenly we feel like she has nowhere to go.
Uh-huh. And Robbie was the boy that she, I guess, kind of had a crush on when she was little.
Mm-hmm.
And they promised that they would marry each other when they grew up. And so after her dad got titled, they moved to London and lived in London for 10 years. And so when she ran away from London to try and find her old home, she returned back to find that Robbie had married somebody else and had kids. It was just a really hard moment where she realized that she doesn't belong in London, but she didn't belong in Moss Bend, her old home, either.
Right. It was sad. I was a bit teary at that scene. I also guess I relate to Sophie as someone who just feels like she doesn't belong, or someone or someplace doesn't want her, doesn't accept her. And that is a very desperate feeling, especially for someone like her who doesn't have many options.
Her only option is to get married or be a spinster.
Mm-hmm.
What a hard place. And I think, especially as an older reader, once you get past kind of your teenage years, you find yourself in positions where, like, you don't belong in one place, but then you try and go home and you don't belong at home anymore either. Like, you've grown out of your home. And that's a very unstable place to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Sarah McLean did such a good job capturing that.
Agreed. It was very thoughtful.
Yeah, but what did you think of King?
I give him a B minus. You know, above average. I liked him. He was apparently very handsome, and he also was witty. The thing that you love most about King, or that I loved most about King, was just that he appreciated Sophie. I mean, that above all is what matters, is that mm-hmm. he could look at her and say, oh, she's different. But that alone doesn't give us a huge sense of who King is. And I agree, we did get more toward the end of the story when we get his backstory about how he, you know, believed he was in love and what happened to Lorna, this woman. But mm-hmm. I would have liked to have known a little bit more about him, just like quirks that would have brought him alive more for me.
Like, how does he take his coffee?
Yeah.
I did like that he appreciated Sophie as a whole mm-hmm. and not just like she was hot. Because a lot of times romance novels are more like, he's so hot, she's so hot, let's bang.
Yeah.
This is more of an intellectual romance, and I like that.
I think it's definitely a thinking woman's romance. Yeah, he wants her mind as well as her body.
And Sarah McLean's really good about writing books like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, really refreshing.
Definitely.
So Sophie is a very strong central character. She has her own mind about things. She doesn't mind breaking the status quo. Would you say that this book is feminist?
I would say, for the most part, yes. I think that what we talked about last week applies, where the romance offers an opportunity for a woman who doesn't have many choices to crave freedom. So we saw that represented, and I thought that that was definitely a feminist message, that all she really wanted was her own life. It just so happens that she found someone who appreciated that about her along the way. In terms of feminist pleasure, I would say it absolutely glorified feminine pleasure, and that in itself is a fairly progressive message.
Absolutely. I also liked that McLean and Sophie constantly call it the aristocracy for the way that it treats women. You know, she says a man can do whatever he wants. He can tarnish his reputation and the aristocracy will welcome him back with open arms. Mm-hmm. Like, one misstep when you're a woman and you're done.
Yeah.
And I think that's absolutely still true. Right? Uh-huh. Maybe not as true as it used to be, but women are definitely held to different social standards than men are.
Good point. Yeah, and poor Sophie, she was just trying to do something right in defense of her sister, and then it turns out to be this massive error
mm-hmm.
that ruins her whole family, not just her.
Yeah, and that question never gets answered. Her sister Sarah is pregnant and married to a duke, and they have some kind of massive falling out. Mm-hmm. And the Duke is shacking up with some rando girl at a party, and Sophie shoves him in a fish pond, which is really the nicest thing she could have done to him. But I want to know what happened between them.
Hmm.
And that never got answered.
Well, was it not the event of him being caught?
Oh, well, Sophie, like, that starts the whole thing with Sophie. But with Sarah, like, they had already had their falling out.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
Yeah, well, it's kind of toward the end and it's a little bit throwaway, but it's when Sarah is like, no, you should totally go sleep with King. Tell him you love him. I wish I had told my husband that I loved him.
Oh.
And now look at where we are. Maybe that gets answered in a later book in the series, because this has two or three books in it and I can't remember. But I was like, I gotta know what happens.
Okay, I miss that.
So, yeah, I mean, there are parts of this book that are definitely not feminist,
mm-hmm.
right? The idea that Sophie kind of sticks around King even when he treats her like a massive dick for like 150 pages.
Yeah.
So there's that little bit. But for the most part, I think this is definitely a book with huge feminist underpinnings to it. And mm-hmm. that's a nice thing to see in a romance novel.
It is. You know, sometimes these novels get a little bit questionable in terms of consent. Like, women act as though getting a little bit raped is okay, which is obviously very problematic. I mean, I don't think that's a very sensitive way to put it, but that's how the books make it seem, you know? Like,
no, it's, I agree with you 100%.
Very weird. So this one does a good job of making it clear that Sophie does indeed want all of these wonderful things that King is doing to her.
This book is very explicit about consent. Yes. King says, "Can I do this?" Like, he doesn't take like a nod or a moan. Like, he forces her to say like yes or no. And that is so important for just safety and trust in a relationship. And I thought that was really well done.
It's done well also in the sense that it doesn't make consent seem like this fuddy-duddy conversation that needs to happen before sex, right? Like, there's this whole train of thought, I think, that people have, like, it's going to kill our sex lives, you know? If people have to say, like, can I kiss you? Like, that's not sexy. But there are ways to make it sexy. It doesn't have to be either or. So anyway, I appreciated that as well.
I also appreciated that the sex was very, very steamy.
It was extremely steamy.
I don't know if it's cool to like talk about your favorite sex scene in a book. Is that fine?
Yeah.
Good, because the scene in the carriage, where they're in a carriage and they're headed toward Lyne Castle, which is King's father's estate. And they're in this carriage and things get super hot and heavy. And literally, I had to take my jacket off.
I mean, it was very steamy. And it was dark. It was dark in the carriage.
Uh-huh. So it was all by like touch.
Yes.
I was like, this is what 50 Shades of Grey should have been.
I loved the love scene in the library. Gotta say, it was a highlight for me. I don't remember if they had sex in the library or not. Maybe they came close.
I think it was like heavy petting.
There was some lap sitting. Heavy petting. I don't know about that phrase.
Is that what the kids call it now?
I don't think that's what they call it. I think that's what 90-year-old women like us call it. Oh my gosh.
Oh, heavy petting is third base. Wait, okay, did I just get older? Yeah. I can't tell.
Yes.
You did. Dang it. That scene was so hot, especially because like when you imagine the smell of books. Ooh. Which is like hardcore a bookworm aphrodisiac. You're like, yep.
Definitely. I do have to tell a story. Okay, one time at the university where you and I went, at our university, there was this big cavernous reading room, and it was technically two stories high. Mm-hmm. But you know, there was only one floor of sitting, and then the ceiling just went up really high. So there were these other library cubes that surrounded the top of this room. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's dead quiet in this room because it's a reading room. And I was just sitting there working by myself one day. And all of a sudden, I just started hearing these very, very sexual sounds. Oh, no. I mean, just groans and slurps and mostly just a female voice having a nice day. And so I started to think I'm like a pervert because I'm imagining the sound, and I look around and the faces of everyone else in the room are just like of shock and awe, because I never could figure out where it was coming from. It was like somebody watching porn on a computer that was so loud that we could all hear it, or if there was something happening in one of these rooms that surrounded the top of the library mm-hmm. reading room. But it was not just me. We all heard it, and it was going down in the library.
Oh my god, that is amazing. That bookworms, what are you gonna do?
Bookworms shouldn't be, you know, taken lightly.
No, we know what's up. We read a lot.
So yeah, I liked the love in a library scene. Are there any like tropes of romance literature that you really like or that you don't like, or anything that showed up here that you really enjoyed?
Okay, so I like witty repartee. So think mm-hmm. like Gilmore Girls level back and forth. And that happens here a lot. It's very smart. You have to pay attention to catch the jokes. Like, I like that high level thinking. I find that very attractive in a man or a partner, whatever. And I tend to gravitate toward romances that have that kind of element in them. I also like strong heroines, but they have to be quirky. Like, I like women who have foibles. So, like, Sophie has a huge lack of self-confidence because her sisters are beautiful and she feels like she's plain. And so
yes.
I want heroines who are strong but not perfect.
I agree completely with the witty repartee. One of my favorite tropes is when the man and the woman, or the hero, heroine, hero, whatever, when the lovers don't like each other at the beginning. I love that. Even more so when they hate each other.
Like in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
I was thinking more of like Much Ado About Nothing, like Benedict and Beatrice. They like start out the play with this biting, witty banter, but it's so funny. And then they grow to love each other basically without even realizing it. I don't know why I love that so much. I just really enjoy it.
I do too. And I think it's because love and hate are so closely related.
Well, it's passion.
Exactly.
That makes sense. One thing I do not like is when there's too much internal waffling, which you kind of alluded to this before, and I felt like there was a bit too much of that here, which I understand that's how it happens when you have feelings for someone or you're trying to figure out whether or not a relationship would work. There's a whole lot of like, I love him, but I hate him.
And I think that happens quite a bit in this book toward the end.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, geez, just...
But we don't like each other, but we love each other. But I love him, but we don't even like each other. That's just too much.
I have often heard one of the criticisms of romance novels being like, if these people would just sit down across from a table from each other for 30 minutes, like we wouldn't have a romance novel. It's just a huge lack of communication, right? Usually it's because people are storming out of rooms and swirling their skirts and flopping down.
Their pride has been hurt.
I will say I am not interested in like super burly alpha males. I don't like guys who are kind of like, you are so hot. I will sleep with you. I will throw you over my shoulder and make you mine. Like,
I take what I want.
That's gross. Right? It makes me feel like I need to shower and not in the good way. Like, ugh, that's disgusting.
Same.
And that is something that I like less and less the older I get. Like when I was a teenager, I was like, oh, that's so hot. And now that I'm twice that age or more, I'm like, or that's rapey. It's like when you're little and you're like, oh, I totally want James Dean. And then you get a little older and you're like, no, I think I'm more Dick Van Dyke. Like, it's like that.
I want Tom Hanks. Come on.
Who doesn't want Tom Hanks is what I'm saying.
There's a lot that just changes in life. And one of those is the way you feel about the opposite sex and what you value in them. I think that's worth saying.
I know when I'm 80, I'm just going to value a guy who has teeth.
And priorities change. So I would love to hear about this from our readers, like especially the ones who do read romance. What are the things that you really like and the things that you don't like certain types of characters or tropes? And yeah, I think that'd be fun to hear about.
I also want to hear what our readers think about baby logs.
Ooh.
So baby logs are basically like final chapters or epilogues where the hero and heroine have fallen in love and everything's worked out. They get their HEA, which is romance speak for their happily ever after. And then in the epilogue, they either have kids running around or the woman kind of gives the guy a sly look and announces that she's pregnant. It just sort of ends up with love, marriage, and a baby carriage, right? Mm-hmm. So I personally do not like them. And I can't really tell you why. I kind of think they are uninteresting, even though, like, I like babies.
Yeah.
So I don't know what my deal is.
I feel the same way, and I don't really know why. Just like you, she definitely is setting us up for it throughout the story. Because they're imagining their little children, right? What those little children would look like.
Brown-haired, blue-eyed, bookworm little girls. I was like, that's a very specific ask for genetics.
Very. And yet, that's probably what they will get because it's a happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess I just feel like I didn't really read this book for a baby.
Yeah.
And I, too, love children. I don't know. It just seems like unnecessary to me.
I think it feels cheap. Like, why do you have to tell me that they have kids? Like, can't I just imagine their future for myself? I should just say I don't like epilogues very much in general. If it's important enough, you can put it in the actual book. I can't think of an epilogue that has introduced babies that I have been like, oh yeah, this really added to my enjoyment of this story. I'm specifically thinking of the ones that I hate, namely the Hunger Games and the I don't like the epilogue of the Harry Potter books. There, I said it. So I don't like baby logs, but I would be interested in what our readers think.
I do too. We're both confused as to why we don't really like them. I guess I don't like them. Maybe a divorce, like a child being brought into the picture, divorces that picture from a romance novel. I don't know.
Maybe in historicals, it's knowing the infant mortality rate. Maybe it's like, oh, there's like a 40% infant mortality rate and women die in childbirth all the time. And so for me, it's like, girl, you in trouble.
Mystery solved.
So yeah, I don't know why I don't like them, but I find them so eye-rolly.
We're gonna have to change the name of this bookshop. Wink, wink.
Yes, and I was like, oh, please. Sorry, everyone. If you loved that part, that's okay.
I would say we probably don't have ourselves figured out in this moment, so.
So yeah, our Instagram questions. Maybe we should know.
Yep.
We had two Instagram questions for this novel, and the first one was, romance novels make $1 billion a year. Why do you think they're so popular?
Virginia Foote wrote, I feel like there's a whole lot of hate in the world, and sometimes with a book you don't really know what you're getting. However, if you pick up a romance novel, 9 out of 10 times you know there will be a happy ending. And even in that other one time, it usually ends so tragically that it's still beautiful in its own way. Such as The Best of Me by Nicholas Sparks, which is very true.
Mm-hmm.
I would say like 9.9%. No, well, 9.9 out of 10 times it's going to be a happy ending.
Mm-hmm. So not to get off topic, but I think that's what I like so much about Sarah McLean's books is that her characters don't have these sort of perfect lives and perfect characters. Like they're broken by the things that have happened to them in ways that make them feel very real.
I like that.
Me too.
I had a pretty basic answer that I feel like was too obvious to even put on the Instagram,
mm-hmm.
which is just that people like reading about sex.
That's true. It's true.
Like,
sex sells.
It does. And there are romances that don't have that in them. So, and people still love those. So those people are reading for their happy ever after.
But the rest of us want to see what happens in the bedroom.
We want to see how it works, which we also talked about last week. Like, we learned a lot
mm-hmm.
as young women reading romance novels. And I will say, I know that probably some of our male readers did not read this book with us this week. Our male listeners don't have to, but there is stuff to be learned here.
I think to put a pin in our Instagram questions, this is one thing we didn't talk about with the book, but is interesting to talk about, is romances put female pleasure at the center of it. Like, romances are primarily centered on what women get out of it. So part of me wonders if that's part of why romance novels tend to be poo-pooed so much.
Hmm.
All of a sudden, it's not men's pleasure that's at the center of this story. It's women's pleasure. So King spends a lot of time complimenting Sophie and telling her she's wonderful and beautiful and combating the kind of nasty things she says about herself. And then the first two or three sex scenes don't even have male orgasm in it. It's like all about mm-hmm. Sophie's pleasure, period, full stop.
Yeah, she is really being treated well and enjoying it perfectly.
And not ashamed of it.
Yeah, with no guilt. She is all right with it.
And that is something that's great about romance novels. But I also wonder if that's something that makes people uncomfortable about them too. And that's why they're trashy, right? Like, women shouldn't read about this stuff.
Very unladylike.
Oh, yeah. If that's unladylike, I don't want to be a lady.
Same. I enjoyed myself immensely.
Me too.
One of your other questions that I really liked was, what fictional character is your ideal romantic hero or heroine? Which, these questions turn out really popular because people get to let their imaginations run wild with them. The Novel Kitchen says, Jon Snow, faux show.
He is very handsome.
I'm down with that. Tell You No Lies says, I'd like to settle down in that bunker in Kansas with Dean Winchester. Which, I have not watched Supernatural, but it is coming up everywhere I look. I have to watch it sometime because I feel like I'm really left out and just missing something huge.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. So, and at Whirligig World said, Aragorn from Lord of the Rings. He is brave, wise, a fair leader, and a king. Which, girl, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have to say, my very first Hollywood crush was Legolas from Lord of the Rings. And, like, I think when that movie first came out, I was in high school. But, like, young high school. And so we were in the theater, and he came on screen. I was like, he's very handsome.
Ooh, Legolas.
I know. Yeah. I was just like, he is so hot.
Oh my gosh. I do not have a type. I have, my tastes are just all over the place. I have often credited my very first sexual thought to watching a Prince video. I just remember thinking, this is filthy and amazing.
Well, I just confessed to you that my first like weird sexual tingling was for Legolas and Lord of the Rings. So what are you going to do?
This is why we're anonymous, guys. Before Prince, it was like minor league crushes on like the Mighty Ducks for me. So, and Casper the Friendly Ghost, the boy who played Casper.
No, shut up. Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh my God. I think I rewound that scene where he was a real boy like a million times.
He's dead and he's beautiful. He's a ghost.
I thought the only person ever in the history of the whole world to feel that way.
Hell no, that kid was all over like Bop magazine.
No, I was just thinking like it was weird because he also would like watch her while she slept.
Yeah, no, I bet it wouldn't hold up. Being a 30-something year old woman, it better not hold up. So I did not answer this question on the Instagram either, but I have a handful. But like, obviously, I'm still mentally working on my romance novel starring Hopper from Stranger Things and myself as a heroine. So that's happening. But my newest this week, I am really, really, really into Tessa Virtue and Scott Moir, the ice dancers who basically like have something amazing happening on the ice, like almost sex.
Do you think they're in love?
They don't talk about what kind of relationship they have. I mean, they talk about having a sports relationship. I don't know what's going on between them, but they're electric together. And I know that is the corniest thing to say, but I am just like wrapped.
There's this one move that they do where like she's like straddling his head.
Uh-huh.
And they are like spinning in circles.
They are simulating sex for us. They got a gold medal.
And the way he looks at her is straight up ice sex. It really is.
It is. They deserve that gold medal because I got everything I wanted out of that for sure. So, yeah, basically like the moving the cutting edge, except in a romance novel starring Tessa Virtue and Scott Moir.
I love it. I'm here for it. So if you enjoyed The Rogue Not Taken, or if you're interested in exploring romances in different genres, we have some recommendations for you. So if you want a really good fantasy romance, I think you should check out Kushiel's Dart by Jacqueline Carey. If you are a big sci-fi person, Gabriel's Ghost by Linnea Sinclair is really good. And Linnea Sinclair is kind of like the number one name in sci-fi romance. If you want a contemporary romance that will make you cry and feel all the feels, Me Before You by Jojo Moyes is a good choice. And if you want a dinosaur romance, because I know you do, you need to read Eternal Pleasures by Nina Bangs, which will at some point be our book club pick, so don't worry.
The hero's name is Ty. Get it?
He's a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
So I have a couple. Mine is, my first one is Glutton for Pleasure by Alicia Rye.
Ooh, so good.
Yeah. And then my second one is When a Scot Ties the Knot by Tessa Dare, which that book, it got like a starred review in Publishers Weekly.
Really?
It was on NPR's like best books of the year list.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're talking a mass market romance novel that was one of NPR's favorite books of the year.
I haven't read it, but I know what I'm doing.
Ta-da! So those are mine for you.
Yay! So we hope you guys enjoyed our romance discussion as much as we did. This is probably one of my favorite discussions that we've had on this podcast. I've really enjoyed it.
Same.
But now we get to talk about next month's pick.
Da-da-da!
Next month, we are reading Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep by Philip K. Dick. Which, now that I think about it, what a good last name to end our romance novel episode with. This month we read romance, and next month we're reading Dick.
That's right. I know absolutely nothing about Philip K. Dick, so I'm super excited actually to kind of dig in. And I've never read anything of his. I've seen obviously tons of the movies that have been adapted from his work. So I'm excited to go to the source on this one.
Mm-hmm. And it's short, and it gives me an excuse to watch a Harrison Ford movie again. So like, aww, how bad could this possibly be? I also have read zero Philip K. Dick, so this is about to be a grand adventure. But we haven't done sci-fi yet, so this is going to be a really fun one.
So good. So, how'd we do, guys? Did we make it? Did we make it as awkward as possible for you? That was our plan.
We made it as awkward as possible for us, so that's good.
I guess so. Thanks for going along with us on this one. I hope you liked the book, everybody, if you read along with us. And if you didn't, read it. Maybe you want to now.
I mean, we could all use a little more romance in our lives. And you know what we could also use? Some more reviews on iTunes.
Seriously. Yeah. We've gotten some really nice ratings lately. So more of that is always good. It helps people find us. Mm-hmm. So if you would subscribe and review us either on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, or TuneIn, those are great. As I mentioned, Maria and I are anonymous. These are not our real names, so we rely on word of mouth and reviews for people to find us on the podcast.
Yes. You can also follow us on social media, where we are very active. On Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, we are at Misfit Book Club. And you can always email us at misfitbookclubpodcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you guys.
Tune in next week, guys, because we'll be caught up next week. Even though we missed a week, we are going to be caught up by next week. So hang in there.
Yeah, and thanks for being patient, guys. We really appreciate it.
Yep.
All right. Well, see you next week, guys. Bye.
Bye, listeners.